Hey guys, welcome to the Challenge Podcast. I'm Coach Steve.
And I'm Coach Nick, and we're going to be talking about everything fitness, health, and the challenge.
Let's get on with the show.
What's up, guys? Coach Steve here. Welcome back to another episode of the Challenge Weekly Show. I'm here with Coach Nick. Coach Nick, how are you doing today?
I'm very, very well. Thanks, Coach Steve. Number 30, podcast number 30.
Yeah, podcast number 30 of our Challenge Weekly Shows. Nick, we've hit our dirty 30s. How exciting is that?
Very exciting. 30? Wow.
No turning back. Say that 30s is the new 20s or something like that?
Correct. You will love our 30s. We'll love this. This is a chance for me to relive my 30s in some way. So I'll take it.
I love it. Well, look, if you're finding the Challenge Weekly Show for the very first time, yes, there are another 29 other episodes where Coach Nick and I are going through everything related to fitness, health, and the challenge. We're talking about, we've got non-scale victories today. We've got our coach's corner. We're answering some questions. And of course, it is always an exciting time in the challenge. Coach Nick, the challenge has actually finished.
I know. This is so exciting this time where people are sharing their transformations with us.
Yeah, I must say this is one of my favorite times of the challenge. So the May challenge wrapped up just a couple of days ago. And now we are in this kind of like limbo stage where our challengers are posting their transformations, what they've been able to achieve over the past 12 weeks. And it's always beautiful to see what people can achieve. And sometimes they're really dramatic and really wow. And some of them where people might not be super happy with their results, but you know, you could see it on their face. They've got this massive grin, this massive smile. They're bright, they're energetic. And you know, you could just feel how excited they are about what they've been able to achieve.
Yeah. And for everybody, every single person, something has changed and you can build on that every time. So it doesn't matter what level you're at. That's what we look for. We just look for one little change every time that we can then build upon. And that's what people are showing us that they've done, and you're inspiring everybody. And we look at everything and it's beyond remarkable what some people have done when they've just put their head down and gotten on with it.
Yeah, you're totally right. And you're right. Sometimes we do only look at our photos or maybe the scales or what our clothes are telling us. But we do need to remember that there's so many other things that have changed over the past 12 weeks of the challenge. Maybe you've gotten stronger. Maybe you feel more confident to go in the gym, or maybe you just feel more empowered to control your lifestyle, your habits, your routine, so that you have control over how your body looks and appears and feels.
Yeah, even if your attitude towards food has changed, even if you have started to understand the role of, say, carbohydrates and you didn't before, that is in itself something that's invaluable, let alone everything else that you've done. So it's just baby steps, and it's baby steps for each and every one of us. So I learn something new every day, and so do you, I'm sure, Coach Steve, because you never stop learning. You're always researching. So it's just about learning something new and then building upon it for the next challenge.
Absolutely. And you're totally right, Nick. It is a journey. And we do need to understand that where we are right now in this moment of time is a reflection of all of our decisions in the past. All our habits, all our routines, all the things that we've done in the past is what's showing right now. And for some people, they join the challenge and you know they go hard for 12 weeks. Maybe they do two challenges back to back and they do it for 24 weeks. And then they just kind of wipe their hands, walk away, and they're like, wait, great, I've done that fitness thing onto the next thing. And that's where we kind of revert back to our old habits, our old routines. And then that's where we might gain weight, where we lose muscle and are not happy with the way that we look. So we do need to remember that the challenge isn't over. The fitness journey isn't over. This is something that we want to be doing for the rest of our life. And sure, you might not be going at 100% all the time. Maybe you take that backseat at 90%, 80%, but we're still trying to have these good routines where we're focusing on our step count. We're focusing on eating good foods. We're focusing on getting stronger in the gym and looking after our bodies, right?
That's all you can do, in just one little bit at a time. And yeah, I do like that point that you make about where we are now as a reflection upon what we've been doing. And you can actually change that. You can change it and you can sort of plant the seed for the future you, and you can pretty much start today with that just by the choices that you make. So say, for example, myself, I didn't feel like walking today. I'm not always super motivated. And I had to make that choice. I'm like, okay, And do you know what I did? I'll just quickly tell you, rather than going my big full way, I adopted the mindset that it's not all or nothing. I'm like, okay, just do a little bit now and then do a little bit later. So that's better than doing nothing. And sometimes we get stuck in the all or nothing mindset where it's like, if I can't do it all, I'm not doing it at all. And that's where each and every one of us just kind of comes to a standstill. So that's even just a tip from me, who's meant to be the most motivational person in the human race. You know what I mean? Like, yeah. All of us have to have these little chats with ourselves sometimes.
That's right. Well, look, I can totally relate with that. And even just last night, and I've spoken about this in a previous podcast, where I purchased a little treadmill. It's a really slim line, tiny little treadmill. And I was at home because we're in lockdown in Melbourne again. And I really couldn't be bothered going outside. I turned on the treadmill, started walking, and I was like, oh, so I ended up only doing 5 minutes on the treadmill. So barely even broke a sweat. I was like, okay, that's enough. So I then went and got dinner ready. So I was preparing dinner. While dinner was cooking, I went, oh, okay, well, maybe I'll go on the treadmill for another 5 minutes. So I then did another 5 minutes, ate dinner. And then after dinner, I did another 10 minutes. So what that meant was I did 20 minutes of walking throughout the day to build up my steps. It was a bit of a rest day for me, but I was pretty inactive yesterday. And, you know, I slowly built it up from there. So you're right. You know, motivation is a bit of a lie sometimes. You know, we're not always motivated. We just kind of got to go and do it, right?
Yeah. And I think that's perfect. And also I think that once you get a clearer picture of down the track how you want to be, that's pretty much the only thing that's going to get you out there doing the stuff. When you go, okay, in a month's time from now, when I may be feeling a little bit better, how do I actually want to look? Because if I don't do something about it today, it's going to catch up with me, you know? So I like to project into the future and just go, how do I want to be when it's summer? Even if I'm locked down, I still want to be like cute. I don't want to be cute locked down. I don't want to be non-cute locked down. Thank you very much. You know, that kind of thing. And strong, to be honest with you. Everything, just the package of everything that I know that I could be. And I think it's just a good reminder for everyone to know that we're only human as well. You know, like we use tips and tricks ourselves that we can share with everybody on this podcast to just sometimes get the hell up.
There was a podcast that I did a couple of challenges ago. And this is a podcast series where I interviewed previous top 10 finalists. So again, if you're finding the challenge podcast for the first time, go check out some of our previous podcasts where I interviewed previous top 10s and spoke about their experiences. And there was this one quote from one individual, I think it was from Nathan. And he said that doesn't matter what you're doing right now, it's what you do next. And I think that has, you know, a bit of a fork in that, where, you know, one, if you, let's say, ate the cookie, it doesn't matter that you ate the cookie. It's what do you do next? Do you eat another cookie or do you go for a walk? Okay. And that's similar on the other side. Hey, you might be like Coach Steve and Coach Nick, where we're training every day, we're eating all the good foods. Hey, you know, you're ticking all the boxes. That doesn't matter, because it's all about what you do next. So even if you are in that peak position right now where you go, hey, I've got the six pack, I'm deadlifting twice my body weight, I'm running 10Ks every day, XYZ, ticking all the boxes. Hey, that doesn't give you a free ticket to go take the piss, because you do need to consider what you're doing next, because it's a bit of an investment, because you're going to reap your investment a little bit later.
That's right. And like, your body actually becomes more like a top of the range car, and that's even more expensive to maintain, and you've got to put in a lot of effort to keep it like that. So yeah, we can't just sit around.
Well, look, it's of course the end of the challenge, and we are going through the process where we're going to be uploading our final photos to the challenge website. Then public voting opens very soon. Then we've got our top 50 announcement, and then our awards night. So talking about a few dates, the day that this podcast is being released, it's the 10th. Of August, that's a Tuesday. So you have yesterday and today to upload your final photo to the challenge website. Then tomorrow, which is Wednesday the 11th, till Sunday, which is the 15th of August, you have a chance to go through public voting. So you will have 3 votes for both men and 3 votes for women, so both men and women. So you can, if you're a guy, you can log onto the Maxine's website during this public voting period and vote for your favorite female transformation, and girls, you can jump on the Max's website and you can vote for your favorite transformation. So 3 votes each. Then that concludes our public voting process. Now, the public voting is quite different to our main voting. So just because you didn't get in the top 50 or top 10 or even the winner, just because you didn't win the public voting doesn't mean that you're completely out of the draw of winning the Max or the Maxine challenge. They're two quite separate competitions. Now, our actual top 50, top 10, and top three are judged via an external panel. Okay, so Nick and I are involved in that judging process. We're too close to you guys. You know, we chat with you on the forums, on Facebook groups. You know, people like our stuff on Instagram. You know, okay, there's lots of bias there. So we're completely out of the picture, and we actually go externally to a judging panel, which goes through a very, very long judging process. And gosh, I don't envy that process. You know, looking at the top 50, you know, the guys, you know, everyone's got a six pack, girls, everyone looks fit and healthy and active. And it's like, well, I wouldn't be the one to try to pick the top 50, let alone the top 10 and the top three. It's a very, very challenging process.
Like, when you see it on Facebook, when you see everyone's transformations, you just think, oh, hang on, that person's really good. That person's really good. So it would be really hard to actually try and narrow that down.
Absolutely. Now, on the 18th of August, so that's a Wednesday, we'll be announcing the top 50. So you'll be able to view that on our challenge website. We'll make a post about it on our Facebook group. We'll post it on Instagram, all the good things. Then we have our awards night. And I do need to apologize. Last week, I said it was on the 13th. So I misspoke. It's on the 20th, Friday, the 20th of August. And we'll be kicking off at 7:30 p.m. And that is Melbourne time. So that's Australian Eastern Standard Time. And you can join Coach Nick and I, where we get to announce the top 10 and top three, along with who actually won our public vote and our community awards vote as well. So we've got lots of awards on that awards night, which is always a fun event.
Absolutely. You don't have to worry about finding something to watch on Netflix that night, because we've got you covered.
It's going to be good. But I'm excited for that. It's going to be really cool.
Oh, yeah. I love that night. That's a great night. It's just so such a good celebration of everybody and everyone's hard work, and a good way to wrap it up.
Now, the challenge website will be closing shortly after the award tonight. So if you are wanting another copy of your training program, nutrition plan, or maybe to ask a question on the forum, or download your journals or anything, any other bits and pieces, look at the recipes or whatever's on the challenge website, make sure you go head on over to that challenge website, and they'll be closing on Sunday. And I think that was the 23rd of August. So shortly after the awards night, the challenge website will close for a short period. Nick and I jump in there and we update all the programs and everything in between. And then we will open again for the August challenge on the 27th for prep weekend. And then the August challenge, the 6-week challenge, officially kicks off on the 30th. So Nick, we've got so many exciting dates coming up.
Oh, we do. We do. It's just flying by. And yeah, there's not long to go until we get up to the 6-week challenge. So that's something to really look forward to.
Now, in other exciting news around the world, the Olympics has wrapped up, which is, I don't know if you've been watching much of it. I've been glued to my screen watching it. I always love seeing athletes perform at their peak level.
Yeah, it's amazing. It's so good. I watched the hockey and, lots of different things. It was amazing. Really, really, really inspiring.
I went full fanboy on the men's 109 kilo weightlifting.
Oh, event. Yes. You were looking forward to that.
I was counting that day down until from the start of the Olympics, watching my boy Lasha Talakase from Georgia, who just absolutely dominated the field. That guy, he's a freak. And I found out he's my age, right?
So, oh, wow.
Yeah. He's in the 109 kilo plus category, which is a difficult category because all the guys in that category are various heights and weights. So, you know, let's say the under 94 kilo category, most of those guys are, you know, the difference of 1 or 2 kilos in size. So most of them have the same like hardware muscle. So that means that the difference between first and maybe fifth is the difference of like 5 kilos. Okay. But in the 109 kilo plus category, the differences in these guys are like, you know, tens and 20s kilos of muscle. So that means the field can be quite spread out. And what ended up happening was Lasha had the world record for the snatch and the clean and jerk, and of course the total. So he had all the world records, and he broke his world records by 1 kilo. Okay.
Wow.
So he ended up snatching 223 kilos from 223 kilos, beat it by a kilo. And he made that look easy, Nick. Oh, geez, that was scary. And then he did a clean and jerk of 265 kilos. So, of course, beating his clean and jerk by a kilo, then set the new total world record of 488 kilos. So he won with 488 kilos. And the guy who came second was 441 kilos. So if you do some quick math, this guy, Lasha, won by like 47 kilos. And you compare that to a different category where the difference between first and fifth was like 5 kilos. So he just absolutely dominated the field. And he'll be a force to reckon with for quite some time. So it was always beautiful to watch Lasher lift, and especially because we all have experiences lifting that type of weight. And I've never picked up 265 kilos and he got that above his head, right? So that's just unfathomable.
No chance.
Maybe one day, but I...
I did do 160 kilos the other day for deadlifts though.
That's awesome.
I know, like what's going on?
An extra 100 kilos on that and above your head.
Over his head. Like I can't deal.
Well, look, Nick, let's move on to some non-scale victories for the week. So our non-scale victories are victories that are not related to the scale. So Nick, kick us off.
Yes. Well, this one's by Adriana McCulloch. Hi, Adriana, if you are listening. So she shouts out to us. So we love it when people shout out to us. thanks, coaches Nick and Steve. Well, she puts our full names, but I don't want to say it. I just think it's better to say coaches Nick and Steve for my challenge liftoff prize. Can't remember the last time I won anything, but I've won so much more starting with Max and Maxine's. I've grown in strength and confidence and learning so much. My body and health are transforming bit by bit and have connected with some amazing people. Thank you all for your support. I mean, if that's not an NSV, then I do not know what is.
That's awesome. Congratulations, Adriana, who was actually our winner of the challenge liftoff just a couple of weeks ago.
Fantastic. So, yeah, I love that. It just basically sums up. If you had to sum up the challenge in a few sentences, that's what we would love you all to get out of it. So there you go. And then now I've got Jessica Delamore. So Jessica Delamore, Jessica writes, the small things that I have found I had success in were switching my milky coffees for long blacks, cutting out alcohol altogether except for a cheeky couple of glasses last weekend celebrating my wedding anniversary, paying particular attention to portion sizes, and finally focusing on pushing a heavier weight each and every time. I found my program becoming too easy. So that is amazing as well. That's another basically thing that we would love everybody to just take away from the challenge when you're doing it. It's as simple as just some little swaps like that. And that's actually a pro tip, really. Like the first thing I do when I'm starting to prep for anything is say I love a good almond milk latte, but it's an easy thing to do, just switch to a long black. Really simple, just reduction of some calories, not a huge drama, and on we go with the day. So we know that when the long blacks start appearing, everything's changing, but it's a subtle shift. So I like that one. It's a little pro tip. Now, next one is Kelly Hardesty, and this is from the journal. Kelly says, the best part is that I've almost forgotten I'm on a challenge because I've made sustainable lifestyle changes. I've learned the fundamentals to eating delicious, nourishing, filling, healthy foods. So that's a lot of different, you know, descriptions for the foods. It's fantastic. Whilst dropping weight, I've eaten burgers and pizzas throughout this challenge, my favorite, but within the food plan, and I've not felt like I've missed out. So I love this one as well, because the thing is, there are ways to create your favorite meals that still are within the calorie needs that you have. So that's one of our biggest takeaways as well. You don't have to actually eat rabbit food like hay, like my bunnies eat. You don't have to eat that. You can actually eat a variety, and you need to eat a variety of foods. So out of all those three, you can see that there's a bit of a pattern where people have discovered stuff that's actually empowering them. So rather than us taking away from people and saying you have to reduce, we're saying this is what you can add to your life to make it better.
I like that. And especially when I look at other diets that I see online or out on media or different places, where it's always kind of really bland foods, you know, the classic bodybuilder diet of chicken and rice, or, you know, having just salad after salad of salad, you know, no dressing, no fun things, nothing exciting. Of course, people aren't going to follow that. Of course, people are going to get bored of that or not find it exciting. So someone like Kelly can turn around and be like, yeah, I get to have all the things that I enjoy, like, you know, burgers and pizzas within some portion control and, you know, under some sort of, you know, self-discipline so that you're not, you know, running away with it, which is great to see that Kelly's learned that, and all of our non-scale victories for making those small changes. Now I've got a few non-scale victories that I found. Now The first one goes to Joe Hargraves, and I found this one on the journal as well. And she says, yay, I finished the challenge, which I think is a non-scale victory on its own. She says that she's feeling incredible and strong. She says that her visceral fat is down, her strength is up, and energy and happiness is up as well. So that's awesome. You know, big ticking of the boxes. She says that she's also already signed up for the 6-week challenge, and she signed up her husband as well with her. So that's awesome from Joe, where she's looking at other aspects of her life that is improving, getting better, getting stronger, so which is good to see. The next one goes to Brad Saypolt. This was on our Facebook group. And he says that I'm not normally one to post on a public forum, which I think even that is a non-scale victory, where we have so many people in the challenge who are our private challengers. They do the challenge. They don't want to post any photos online. Totally fine. They just kind of sit on the fence and watch what's happening online. But it takes a little bit of courage to kind of step out and, you know, post yourself, make yourself seen by other people. And that can be actually a big motivating and driving factor to keep on going, because, you know, you've been seen now. So Brad then goes that, you know, he's not normally posting on a public forum, but he's been motivated by everyone else's posts. So the last 12 weeks, not a physical change for me, but some huge changes in my mindset. Looking forward to smashing out the next challenge. So congratulations to Brad. You know, you're taking that step out of your comfort zone to post a photo of yourself into our Facebook support group, which has over 8,000 members, getting close to 9,000. So it's a big, big community. So congratulations to Brad. And then finally here, we have a power couple. So we have Nathan and Ashley Simpson, who posted on our Facebook group. And just summarizing their post, which is quite a long one, they said that they didn't have a perfect challenge. You know, they had a few hiccups where maybe they had a drink here or there, or maybe a glass of soft drink here or there, but that's okay, because they continued to support each other throughout the challenge. They got better and better as they progressed through the challenge. They've achieved an amazing result, and they have a newborn and a 5-year-old with them as well. So I'm sure that's a very stressful environment in their household, but it's great that they were able to support each other to complete the challenge. Congratulations to Nathan and Ashley.
Yeah, I love it when couples get together and empower each other to do it, because it's the most supportive environment. We know that environment makes such a difference.
Look, Nick, let's move on to our Coach's Corner. So our Coach's Corner is where Nick and I offer our tips for the week. So Nick, would you like to kick it off for us?
Yes. Well, speaking of environment, I'm just going to have a little bit of a chat about planning meals in lockdown, just ways to possibly avoid extra snacks. So like if you're working from home, I've even noticed, you know, my kids doing schooling from home, everyone's eating patterns go out of whack. So say it's okay. Say my kids, they're active, whatever. So they can afford to come down and have like maybe 4 or 5 muesli bars or whatever it is that they're having, because they're young. But like Shane and myself, we can't be doing that. So some strategies that I have, this might be straightforward for some people, but if it isn't, at least you'll know some of my hacks, little things that I do. So what I tend to do is I will go for protein-filled snacks, such as boiled eggs, things like that. So also what I do, like just taking it right back, is similar to the meal plan on the challenge. I pre-plan in my Fitness Pal every single day what I'm going to eat, and I will plan 3 big meals, that's for me, and then a couple of snacks around that, and I will pre-prepare the snacks, and then I just don't allow myself any other difference. So there's chocolate in my house. There's the environment. It's a war zone, you know, but I pretty much make sure that I fill myself up with things like boiled eggs, tuna cans. I sound a bit, but things that I know are going to fill me up. So, you know, when you go to the supermarket, just grab those things and pre-prepare them. So definitely have some boiled eggs on hand. And then the other thing is a nice pot of tea. Now I sound like a grandma, but a peppermint tea or a rooibos tea or something that you can sip on just to double check that you're not actually just thirsty or craving something, because that, sit with that for a bit. The other thing that I have to say is just try and rate your hunger. So if it's super, super urgent and you can't do anything without eating, it's actually, it might be that you actually are hungry. But if you take a step back and go, am I starving for this? or am I bored? If you just ask yourself that, then occasionally maybe that muesli bar won't get through the gatekeeper. So they're just some little hacks. I don't know if you've got any that you use to just avoid, because sometimes I think if we're a little bit bored, we think that that's a good idea. And in lockdown, you know how it can be a little bit sometimes frustrating as well. So it's just, we're trying to complete this challenge. We're trying to stay on top of everything, but there are other things going on. And then people tend to bake as well. So if you want to bake, I would say instead of not baking, try and choose some healthier baking recipes, such as, like, just say you love your banana bread, maybe look up something like a healthy protein banana bread, but also just be really cautious of portion sizes there as well. Another hack that I have is freeze a banana, put it in a Nutribullet, and it is banana ice cream. Yeah, it's really yummy. Frozen banana does taste like a gelato. It does. And so does any sort of berries. So I love a good frozen berry, and I just pretend to myself that it's a sorbet. I mix it with our protein powder, and off we go.
I think for me, I'm a big snacker. If there is like something that's that I can just grab with my hands, I'll eat it. And I know that, and I'm the fitness guy, and I know that that's what I'm going to do. I'm going to snack. So for me to break that habit is I try my best to create friction so that I don't complete that habit. Because if I make it easy, I'll do it. So if I grab those snacks and put them on the kitchen table, that's, you know, maybe unwrapped bits of chocolate, I'm just going to walk by, grab it, put it in my mouth, and I won't even know that I had it. So I've made that really easy. So what I do is I make a lot of friction so that I don't do it as easily. So, you know, let's say, think of a really classic bit of chocolate, you know, it's wrapped up. So you keep it wrapped up, keep it up in the bag, and then you'd store that bag somewhere, you know, on the other side of the house. So it's really hard. So if you're going to snack, you're going to open the fridge, nothing in there, you open the cupboard, nothing in there, you're not going to look at something and grab it, a bite, and then walk away. So for me, I create lots of friction for those behaviors that I don't want to do. And then I make it really easy to do things that I know are better for me. So if I do want a snack, I turn to things like, let's say, fruit. Because something like an apple, you eat a whole apple, you're probably going to be feeling full. It has lots of fluid in the apple. It has lots of sugar in that apple, and it has lots of fiber. So what that means is that it's a very slow ingesting carbohydrate that slowly enters your bloodstream. Because of the fiber, it takes a while to digest, and it takes some time to actually eat that. You know, eating an apple takes you maybe a minute or two to bite, chew, chew, chew. So then for me, that feels like a big snacking adventure. Great, I got a snack. I feel it in my belly. I feel warm. I feel full now. And I might have consumed 50 calories, right? So a very small amount throughout the day by having that apple. So I made that, try to make that easier by having that fruit bowl in front of me in the kitchen, and make it really hard to have those things that I know that I won't have control over, like those chocolates. And they're deep in the contraband cupboard, which I don't open very often.
Yeah, I agree. And yeah, just making that, because then you actually have to make a conscious decision. You can't blame anything but your own choice there, because there's so many, you've created so many barriers to getting to that chocolate that it will ultimately be a very conscious choice when you do, you know, if you get to the gatekeeper of unwrapping that chocolate.
That's right. And I've even spoken about like my kryptonite, things like hummus, or anything in paste form, even like yogurts and stuff. So I choose just to not have them in the house. So if I was to go and do something like that, like have a tub of yogurt, I need to grab my keys, get in my car, drive to Coles or Woolies, buy that yogurt, come home, open it up, sit on the couch with my spoon and eat the whole thing. Like it's a very big process, step. If I had it in my house, open, ready to go, like I won't even think. I'll just grab the tub, start eating it, and then put it away. And then, well, I put it in the bin because it's empty. But for me, it's all about creating friction, making the things that I don't want to do really hard to do, and then making it easier to do the things that I should be doing.
Yeah. And also if you have any, like if you have kids and they leave leftover things around, just remember that those calories do count if you put them in your mouth instead of putting the snack like back in the fridge, or, you know, saving it for another time for them, or, you know, whatever. If you're eating it instead of cleaning it up, then those calories do count. So just also make sure that you consciously calculate in a day what you have consumed in this time in between the challenges. So if you do it, write it down, because otherwise you'll be very surprised when things don't go your way later on. You'll be like, well, how did it happen? At least you can reference and go 3 muesli bars, You know, that can be up to sometimes 600 calories. So just be conscious of things like that. So like just say you took three bites of a muesli bar, you know, I mean, it's okay. Like this isn't extreme, but you know, you could be looking at 80 to 100 calories. So just remember that that's where it would have come from if you find that you end up in a calorie surplus, which you've been trying so hard. If you've been on weight loss, you've been trying to sort of avoid that. So just remember those little habits. And remember, we will eventually all get out of lockdown. So we want to act for our future selves. Like we said before.
I like it. It's really good advice. So from here, I wanted to talk a little bit about pre-workouts.
Yep.
And I guess what we want to be looking for in a pre-workout stimulant, and I guess what they're all about, you know, should we be taking a pre-workout, or, you know, do we want to be having anything before we train? So I thought I'd talk a little bit about some of the compounds that you'd find in a pre-workout supplement and what they do in your body. So let's talk about the biggest ergogenic aid. So ergogenic aid means something that helps us perform. And the biggest ergogenic aid would be the most used drug in the world. Yes, it's a drug, and that is caffeine. So caffeine is very closely linked to our strength and our performance, and plays a major role in our ability to be stimulated for training. So if I'm really tired and lethargic, I'm not going to be going and lifting, you know, twice my body weight in a deadlift. I'm not going to go be bench pressing for reps or, you know, training at my peak potential. I'm going to be tired. I'm going to be sleepy. Like, I don't want to do this. But if I was to have a source of caffeine, just that cognitive focus before I train can improve my training session. And if I was to time my caffeine consumption before I train, then that means that chronically, so over time, my performance in the gym will be better and better and better, which means to more gains. Okay. So when we're talking about caffeine, we do need to be a little bit cautious about how much caffeine we do consume. So caffeine, because it works on our nervous system, we do kind of get this repeated dose effect where each dose of caffeine will have a lesser dose than the previous dosage. And anybody who's drunk coffee knows this, where maybe when you first drunk coffee, you'd have one cup of coffee and, oh, geez, happy day, you're good to go. But then now you might be having five cups of coffee a day and you still feel tired because our nervous system has kind of become used to that stimulant. Okay. So we do need to be aware of that. And now what can end up happening is that we have lots of caffeine throughout the day, and then that inadvertently affects things like our sleep. So caffeine does have a half-life of about 6 to 8 hours, depending on what source you look at, and of course, depending on the individuals. So that means that after 6 hours, there's still about half the amount of caffeine still active in your body. So if you're going to be having caffeine in the afternoon or even in the evening, when it comes sleep time, caffeine is still in your system. For some of us, we might go, oh, well, Steve, I can still sleep really well. I can have a cup of coffee and it puts me straight to bed. Sure. But your ability to go to sleep and get to sleep isn't the same as having a restful night. And what we do find is that those who consume lots of caffeine or have caffeine in their bloodstream do tend to have more restless sleeps and lower quality of sleep, which can create a big snowball effect of this constant feeling of tiredness and this constant dependency on caffeine. Okay. So we do need to be aware of our total caffeine intake.
Yeah. It's a bit of a tool, isn't it? Even though we use it as almost like it's pleasure as well. But if you want to use it as a tool, you need to use it strategically.
Yeah. So how much caffeine do we want to take before we train? Well, there's been some interesting studies, and the recommendation that I'm going to say today is between 3 to 5 milligrams per kilo of body weight. So put that in perspective. Let's say Coach Steve, I'm about 100 kilos. I want to be having between 300 and 500 milligrams of caffeine about an hour before I train. And that's to get like an effective stimulus and an effective change on my strength output before I train.
And a shot of coffee, would you say?
Yeah. So an average cup of coffee is about 200 milligrams. An average like serving of pre-workout, again, is about 200 milligrams. So for me, I would be looking at that standard serving of a pre-workout to get that stimulus dose for me. Okay. For most individuals, let's say, you know, you're a 60 kilo woman, you know, you're looking at that like 3 to 5 milligrams. Similarly, you know, you're looking at about that 200 milligrams. That's about 3 times your body weight as an example. Okay. So for most of us, having the standard dose is more than enough to get some good strength changes and some good effective outcomes of caffeine. Now, the problem is when we go, okay, well, if I'm having that 200 or 300 or 400 milligrams of caffeine before I train, how much more caffeine could I have throughout the day? And it does depend where we're not really sure of the actual upper limits because, you know, everyone kind of responds a little bit differently. And there's some studies where they were giving people 13 milligrams per kilo of body weight. And that was an hour before they train. And you know, they were fine. So put that in perspective that let's say me 100 kilos, 13 milligrams per kilo of body weight, that's 1,300 milligrams, just a lot of caffeine. That's the equivalent of like 6 cups of coffee an hour before I train. And they looked at the outcomes and they saw a significant change in strength. So we don't really know what the upper limit is, but to, you know, give you a limit to be like, okay, let's be reasonable with our caffeine intake. I would be saying if you're consuming around that 500 milligrams of caffeine per day, that's when we might be trying to put a cap on it going, it might be starting to affect your sleep cycle. Okay. So for someone like myself, if I was to have like a cup of coffee in the morning, and then a pre-workouts, maybe in that mid morning or even afternoon or so, I would be pushing that cap of how much caffeine, you know, I'd be wanting to have throughout the day. Okay. That's caffeine. The next types of compounds that will be really helpful in a pre-workout is a nitric oxide booster, which can improve our blood flow. And what that does is it helps to vasodilate, which is to make our blood vessels bigger. That can help with the pump. That can help with improving, you know, blood flow around the body or improving, you know, oxygen and nutrient supply to our muscle. Now, we can get these through compounds such as citrulline. So a lot of pre-workouts have a citrulline malate or an L-citrulline. So one being the goes directly through the blood-brain barrier and one that gets digested slowly, makes its way in through the blood, into the brain. And citrulline is a precursor for what's called arginine. And arginine is one of our amino acids, okay? So if you're following along, we want citrulline, which turns into arginine, and arginine plays a role on our blood vessels to dilate our blood vessels. The other pathway is through betaine, and we can get betaine actually from beetroot juice. So that's where you get this idea of people having beetroot or beetroot juices or beetroot supplements before they train, because betaine gets turned into nitrite, and nitrite has another effect on our blood vessels, which vasodilates our blood vessels, which improves our blood flow as well. So that's a category, and we'll kind of call that improving blood flow, and that's where we're looking for citrulline and betaine, okay? Then our kind of third category that we're looking at is what we call lactic acid buffers. So lactic acid buffers, as their name suggests, is we're looking at the way that our body handles lactic acid. Most of us, as we go through our training careers, we slowly build up our tolerance to lactic acid, where maybe when you were first, you know, super beginner, you could withstand, you know, X amount of lactic acid. Then now you've been training for 1 year, 2 years, 5 years, 10 years. Now you can withstand, you know, Y level of lactic acid. Now, a lactic acid buffer can help to push that that tolerance level of when we start feeling that lactic acid. And what that correlates to is through your training session. Let's say you're repping it out, or you're doing a HIIT session, or maybe some cardio. When you feel that lactic acid buildup is maybe that burning sensation where you kind of want to give up. That threshold can push out that burning sensation so that we're able to get a few more reps out or go for an extra 10 seconds on a HIIT session or a circuit or go for an extra minute or two in a cardio session. And the main influencing factor to lactic acid is beta-alanine. Now, beta-alanine is that compound that gives you that skin crawling feeling. So if you've had a pre-workout and you kind of feel like, oh yeah, I got the tingles, that's beta-alanine.
Okay. It can even give you like a little bit of redness in certain places as well. It's like,
so that redness might actually be some of the other stimulants or thermogenics that are in some compounds. So that might be that you're really sensitive to caffeine or like, you know, green tea extract or something similar, which can give you that rash like sensation. Okay. But that's very individual based. For most people, they won't experience anything. For some, you know, it's really prominent. Okay. So they're the main three kind of categories. We've got caffeine, which is the big one. Then we've got our blood flow dilators, which would be our citrulline or our betaine. And then we've got beta-alanine, which is our lactic acid buffers. There are other fun things in pre-workouts, mainly around creatine. And if you're taking a like a creatine monohydrate, we don't really want to be too fussed about that one there. And then other big factors that we're looking for in a pre-workout is water. We want to be really hydrated while we're training, and not just hydrated where you consume water and there's water in your belly. Like if anything, that's going to make you feel a little bit sick because you've got this water just in your belly. We want that water to actually be, you know, saturated in our muscle, in our tissues. So we do want to be consuming water, you know, a few hours leading up to our bout of training. And then also something like salt. And I've spoken about salt before in a previous podcast here, where salt can be really helpful prior to training, which again can increase our blood pressure, which can then promote blood flow, which can promote oxygen to our muscles and nutrients to our muscles. That can be really helpful before we train as well. So that's a super summary on pre-workouts. And hey, lucky for you, all of these compounds are found in our pre-workouts with Max's products and in some of our new products in Maxine, which might be released very soon.
Oh, that's cool. Yeah. Well, I left one of mine at the gym, so I'm really annoyed because I don't really have anything at home other than caffeine, but I reckon that that's why my performance was down today. I don't know. Like just you talking about all that, it makes me remember why I take it, especially like the lactic acid one is such a, the lactic acid buffer, because just those extra few reps, that's what counts. You know, that's what actually counts. And even like that mental focus that you can get as well, just to push through those last few reps.
Yeah, absolutely. And sure, I'm sure there's some people listening here and going, well, I don't need a pre-workout. That's cool. That's fine. You know, we start to ask that question, you know, are you leaving gains on the table? You don't know. You could have a cup of coffee like Nick suggested, but caffeine or, coffee beans can get absorbed a little bit differently to just a pure caffeine essence. And it also has a little bit of a diuretic effect when we have a coffee. So if you have a cup of coffee, you might be needing to run to the toilet, which can influence our training session.
Yeah, that's a good point about the caffeine, about how it's different in the pre-workout as well. Yeah, very good points. I love it. Yeah, I miss mine. Hopefully I can go back to the gym and get it. I leave it there because I just do. That's just my little thing. So it makes me go sometimes, not just to the shed. And I used to be someone who didn't really use it that much. But since I have been using it, I don't know if you can correlate what, you know, you'd have to do a scientific study on me, but I just know that I've been going very well with my training. So now I'm a bit sort of hesitant to not use it, because you know when you find something that's good and it works and it's like, is that me or is it that thing that I've done or is it the straps that I'm holding or is it the way that I, is it this particular barbell? You know, you just go, wow.
My last kind of comments on pre-workouts is, I guess, because it's a stimulant and it affects our nervous system, we can become that like repeated bout effect where we kind of need an increased dose to get a similar outcome. So for me, what I tend to do is actually cycle off of a pre-workout while I'm on like a deload. So for me, every kind of meso cycle that I do, you know, 4 to 6 weeks of training, I would do a deload session where I'll deload for the week and I would choose to, restrict my caffeine for that week. And oh gosh, like those training sessions are hard. Because I kind of feel that tiredness come through. But it also gives me a chance to kind of like resensitize to that caffeine so that when I do go back onto caffeine or that stimulant in the next meso cycle, I require less stimulants to get a similar outcome.
That's a really good idea. Really good idea.
And the last thing I'll say would be when to take it. So you probably benefit from taking it within that hour before you do like a resistance training session or like a HIIT training session. If you are planning to do some steady state cardio, like maybe go for a walk or something like that, you probably don't need a pre-workout to do a walk or even like that moderate intensity activity. Let's say you're doing our couch to 5K or maybe half marathon or triathlon program. You might not need a pre-workout if you're going to go and train for 2 hours on a run or a swim or something like that. You may benefit just from having some good quality food before you train and then get going. Okay.
Yeah, just make sure you stay hydrated.
Absolutely. Okay. Look, let's go through some questions for the week this week. And I think with lockdowns affecting, you know, half the country at the moment, there might be some people who are at home without any equipment. And there was one question coming through, is that someone wanted to start running while they were on lockdown, doing some cardio style training, but that individual hadn't been a runner before. And they asked, how do I start running? So Nick, I thought this would be a good question for you to answer. If you were helping someone who's never really run before and they wanted to begin running, what steps should that individual take?
Well, definitely, you've already answered my first question that I would ask them. I would say, like, what is your background in terms of, sporting endeavors? Because if you've never run before, we just also have to just do a quick assessment of what shoes you have, because you'll be very limited in your abilities to run if you're running in the wrong shoe. So it might not even be your fault if you suddenly feel like you're a little bit injured when you're running, if you have shoes that perhaps don't support that. So just make sure that you've got some sneakers that at least fit you well, that they don't have to necessarily be designed for running, but maybe sort of your gimmicky sneakers or lifting shoes aren't really the way to go. So just make sure that they've got like a malleable sole, very different to weightlifting shoes. So just think about that. So just say that you've got all that set up, you've got all your gear, and you're leaving the driveway. So this is Shane, my husband, who has actually just taken up running himself. So he's done one run. And I think he went too hard too fast. So he is now just stepping it back. So what I told him was what I would tell everybody here, which is just start by doing the run-walk technique, which actually, to be honest, even in marathons, I don't know if you saw when you were doing your one, but people actually do that in the marathon as well. It's a thing. It's a vibe where you run and then you walk and then you actually see these people. You overtake them. They overtake you. It's a thing. They get great times. But, yeah, so I would pick a distance that you can just lightly jog. It doesn't matter if it's 100 metres or if it's 200 metres, and then I would match it with a walk. So, and I would pick your distance quite conservatively to start off with. So we've got a park that has a toy whale in it, so we call it the Whale Park, and it's about 3.2 Ks to go from the whale, from our house to the whale and around. So that's kind of a nice one to start with. If you don't know the exact distance, just pick something that you would normally walk and just start with matching the distance of the running and the walking. That's how I would start. And look, if you run out of gas, it's okay. What you need to do is just pick up the pace on your walk just a little bit as well. So, like, just because you're tired when you're running doesn't mean that you stop altogether and start to just limp along. Pick up the pace when you're walking. Everything counts. Then from there, you can start to do some interval training. So we can do the fartlek training. So that's Swedish for speed play. So it's on and off training. So you could do 20 seconds of running with 40 seconds off. And you know what? The best thing is, if you've got Spotify, there are heaps of different timers on there. So you could even just choose a Tabata timer where you do 20 seconds on, 10 seconds off for 8 rounds, even though you wouldn't want to do it as hardcore as Tabata, because Tabata is meant to be flat out, you can't move, but just use it as a timer. So go maybe find a Tabata. I've actually got one that I've shared, but I could share it again if you like. You can do back-to-back Tabatas. So you could actually do 16 minutes of just 20 seconds on, just jogging, 10 seconds off walking. And just keep doing that as well, and just build it from there. And eventually you'll find that your runs will get longer and your walks will then hopefully get shorter, and eventually you'll do the whole lot. But I would say just pay attention to your technique from the start. Try and also make sure that you are facilitating your run by still doing some sort of even body weight training or some hanging. So if you've got somewhere where you can hang, because you don't want to end up all hunched over. So just make sure that you are, just working those back muscles as well to make sure that you're supporting yourself through your run. You don't want to end up like a hobbit. Is a hobbit the right description? Middle earth creature. You don't want to be a middle earth creature. But also, just find a stride, find a tempo, and also try and another just little tip that I've got is try and find some music. Look up something like something with maybe 100 beats per minute, and then you can actually do your stride that works. Like, they've got running music, 100 to 120 usually is quite good to find a stride, and then you can kind of get lost in the music as well. So that's just an extra layer.
I like it. That's good advice. And I just want to kind of touch on maybe like that load management side of things in terms of maybe the those aches and pains that we might feel when we start a new training adventure. And commonly we see individuals starting to run and they experience things like, you know, knee pain, shin splints, sore lower backs. It's a new stimulus to the body. And we need to remember that it can take a bit of time for our body to adapt to that. And sometimes we do kind of go too hard too quickly and we experience some of those aches and pains. So it's all about kind of slowly building it up, where maybe you start by doing kind of like that walk run where you're you know, walking for 5 minutes, you run for a minute, and then you walk for another 5 minutes, and then run for a minute, walk for 5 minutes, and then we build it up slowly over time. And if you are experiencing those aches and pains, okay, it's likely that you went too hard too quickly. We just need to regress it slightly before we then advance.
Yeah, and look, I've got some common little aches and pains that I will feel in the first couple of times that I do my run. So, you know, there are certain things that if you feel it, you just need some time to recover, and then you can be okay. You know, say for me, often hip flexors, they can get a little fatigued, and, you know, just until it all kicks in again. So, you know, if you're used to your body and you know, then yeah, just make sure that you also recover. So like a nice warm bath, eating some nice food, that kind of thing is also good. And also, yeah, when you come home, just maybe instead of just sitting down on the couch, maybe just walk around the house a little bit until you cool down. That's another good tip, rather than just dropping onto the couch and sort of staying there for the rest of the day. Oh, I've just got to say one more thing. Whenever you input something new into your body, like a run, you are going to be super, super hungry. So just make sure that you've already got your meal plan for after it, because that kind of thing makes you starving when you first do it. So just remember that you've got to plan those meals out. Otherwise, you'll eat the house down when you come home. You know how when you start something new, you just go, oh my gosh, what's going on?
When I was beginning my running journey, yeah, I was experiencing those aches and pains. And I guess I was always in a routine where once I got home, I tried to do some sort of stretching, mobility, some sort of like cool down to keep myself kind of a bit limber. Because you're right, like when you're going for a run for 10, 20, 30 minutes, you're kind of in the same posture, maybe that hunched over position. You're kind of just like slogging it out in that pace. So I kind of tried to open myself up in those positions. That was kind of helpful. One thing we do know physiologically is that your cardiovascular system will actually adapt quicker than your body will. So what I found was when I started running, happy days, I was running for, you know, week one, week two, week three, no problems. But then as soon as my cardiovascular fitness increased, I was able to run longer because, you know, fitness wise, I was able to go. Sure, great. But then that's when I started to get those shin splints. My feet started to really ache. My hips were really sore. I got that lower back pain. It was because my body hadn't adapted, but my cardiovascular system had. So it is a little bit of a tug of war between those two, you know, systems of our body, where you probably could go further if you wanted to, but sometimes you do need to pull it back slightly so that your body can adapt and that you can have a healthy running career.
That's right. You want to have respect for it. So it is a sport in itself. And even though it's free and it's outside and everybody can do it, you've still got to take the same steps as you would when you're weight training in the gym, and just have some respect for it and start gradually if you wish to continue for a long time.
Next question here is talking about our protein products and the differences between different types of protein. Mm-hmm. And I guess we get this question a lot because there are different types of proteins and they all have different prices and different acronyms and letters and things, and it gets confusing. So let's talk about the differences between WPC, which is whey protein concentrate, WPI, whey protein isolate, probably WPH as well, whey protein hydrolase, and then casein. So all different types of proteins. So when we're talking about protein powders, we're mainly talking about whey protein powder. And we need to understand the process that it is just a food product. It's a milk product. So whey protein comes from milk. So they grab skim milk and they go through a process of dehydrating that milk and then filtering that milk. In that first process where they filter that milk, they kind of pressurize it, squeeze it out, and they add a compound to it. The milk kind of curds, and then we get our casein, which is that curd, and then we get our whey protein, which is what's left over. So that's the first kind of derivative of milk, where we have our casein and our whey. So that casein protein actually gets kind of moved into factories to kind of go through and make cheeses and yogurts. And then that casein protein has a little bit more lactose in it, a little bit more of a complex product, and it takes a little bit longer for our body to digest that protein. So that casein protein, which is found in our nighttime proteins or our new Maxine custard protein, that's a really great one for a really slow digesting protein release. So a great one to have maybe for like a dessert or in the evening before we go to bed, so that we can have a stimulus or a bolus of protein in our bloodstream so that we can have a nice sustained muscle protein synthesis response. Okay. Now we need to understand that that protein response is much lower than other types of proteins. So we have a longer and smaller protein stimulus coming from a casein protein. Now on the other side of that derivative, first we start off with whey protein concentrate. So think of it a little bit of like a filtering process. We have our whey protein concentrate, which is our WPC. It's about 80% protein, and then it still has some elements of carbohydrate and fat still in it because it hasn't been filtered completely. And we know milk has high levels of fat and carbohydrate sugars in it. So it does have other bits and pieces in it. So whey protein concentrate, a little bit cheaper to make from a manufacturing side of things, can be useful in other areas because it has those extra calories from other sources. And that's commonly found across all proteins. So any brand protein will mainly use a WPC, whey protein concentrate. When we filter that even further, we go into WPI. So WPI is whey protein isolate, because we're kind of isolating it a little bit more. That has filtered out more lactose and more bits and pieces in it. And that's kind of closer to that like 95, 99% protein. It's a lot more protein in that and more suitable for someone maybe like myself. I'm a little bit sensitive to lactose. So if I was to have lots of WPC or even casein protein, I feel it in my stomach. So I choose to have a lot more WPI, whey protein isolate. Then we kind of go through a more filtered process of the whey protein isolate, where we kind of go through into whey protein hydrolase or whey protein peptides, and much more filtered, a lot less other things in it, and closer to that 99.9% protein in that. Much more expensive protein to manufacture because it's filtered. And of course, the more filtered it becomes, the quicker we can digest it. So if we picture that graph, we've got like a small stimulus of protein, but a lot more sustained, and that would be our casein protein. Then we've kind of got this more medium wave, where we've got a medium-sized stimulus of protein, but a medium level of sustained protein. That would be our whey protein concentrate. Then that graph kind of becomes more narrow, where something like that WPI or the whey protein peptides, that hydrolase, that enters our bloodstream really quickly. It's a really high level of protein, but it doesn't stay in our bloodstream for too long because it's already broken down completely. Our body utilizes it, then away it goes. So a lot of our products actually utilize a mixture. So if you look at something like our Maxine Burn or our Max's Super Shred range, that will have a mixture of WPI, WPC, a bit of peptides in there, and maybe even a little bit of casein just to have that sustained release of protein throughout multiple different times. However, if you are a bit sensitive to those types of proteins, you may choose to have something like, Max's 100% whey, which is what I choose to have, mainly for some digestion changes. Okay. But that's protein powders. The main takeaway is that they're all derived from milk. So they're all just a food product. They're not really some magical drug. It's basically a food product. It's a supplement, and it can be helpful for our, fitness journey so that we can continue to build muscle and look after the tissues in our body.
Absolutely. It's a great way of just getting some quick protein without thinking about it too much. I certainly do use it, and I find that it helps me to get my quota.
Absolutely. And especially getting that quota of protein without those additional calories, because sure, you can go eat a chicken and rice with a bit of broccoli in there, but you're having a whole load of carbohydrate and fat, and it gets digested really slowly into the body. And you're probably better just to have a really convenient protein powder. You can consume it really quickly, enters the bloodstream, does what it needs to without all those additional calories.
Yeah, definitely.
Now, finally here, let's talk about the new six-week challenge, which is kicking off just in a couple of weeks, where we've had a number of people contact us through social medias, through emails, and other different avenues, where they're asking, how do I prepare for the six-week challenge? So it's still a couple of weeks before our prep weekend. So this is kind of like preparing to prepare for the challenge. Nick, let's talk about some ways that people could start preparing right now. So what advice would you give somebody?
All right. So if you were to start right now, what I would do is make sure that you have had a think about your environment and the people that you are surrounded by. So are there people that are supportive, or are there people that may be a bit resistant to it? So put your strategy in place already about that. Put your strategy in place about your environment. Start to clean out the cupboards. Start to find your containers. Do your meal prep sort of plan. It doesn't matter if you still haven't figured out the foods, but how are you going to do it? Are you going to cook every day? Are you going to start at the start of the week and do a few? How are you going to do it? Like, where does that fit into your day? How do you need to possibly change your eating habits? So that's another thing. Write down some things that you think don't serve you. And then the other thing that I would do is absolutely something that's within our control, that is, as we've said, you know, today, I think a few times I've said, you know, outside is free. So we have, if you're in lockdown or no lockdown, you've got your daily steps. So I would start stepping, because in every single element of every program that we have, we do require that that you do get the steps up. So that's a little secret reveal. So you can start walking now, you know, start getting that plan in place. Plan when in the day might suit you. You know, when are you actually going to get it done? Are you like me that if you don't do it in the morning, then you really struggle later on in the day? So there are a few tips that I have.
I like it. I think for me, my advice would be to just begin reflecting on what your day is like now. So are you going to a gym? Maybe you are. Are you exercising? Maybe you are. Are you actually going out and going for a walk? Maybe you are. So whatever you're doing, you know, start writing it down. And we do see some really big changes when we start to measure our day, when we start to kind of quantify it, when we start to actually, you know, have that journal, have that diary and go, what did I actually do today? So my big tip would be to start writing down what you're eating every day. So no matter what it is, even if you're having the pizza, the wine, the beers, whatever it is, just start writing it down. Go purchase a small book if you're in lockdown, just go to like a supermarket and get a little book there. Or maybe you can go to a Kmart or something like that. Just grab a really classic book and just start writing down what you ate at what time. So maybe you had breakfast at 7 a.m. and you had bacon and eggs. And maybe the next day you had breakfast at 8 a.m. and you had cereal. And you go, oh, well, okay, I was really hungry when I had that cereal at 8 a.m. But geez, when I had that bacon and eggs, I was full all day. Okay, that's an interesting reflection to make. And then even similar what you said about, let's say, your step counts. Start to quantify it. Be like, how many steps did I actually walk today? Maybe you start using an app on your phone, such as those health apps, which can track your steps if you have your phone in your pocket. Maybe you have a smart device like a Fitbit or an Apple Watch or something like that, and start to track how many steps you do. Maybe one day you did 2,000 steps, the next day you did 20,000 steps, and the day after you did 3,000 steps. And it's like, well, is there an average here? Like, could I get better over time? So I think the best thing you could do is just to start to reflect on what you're doing now, and then see if you can do a little bit better. Maybe you can, instead of having bacon and eggs for breakfast, maybe just have some eggs and maybe remove the bacon. Or maybe instead of doing 3,000 steps a day, maybe you could do 3,300. So you're slowly doing a little bit more. And as we start to become more aware of what we're doing now, that's when we can change it. And then when the challenge rolls around, you go, hey, I've got a really good idea of what I'm doing now. This is what the challenge is asking of me. I can fit this in really nicely. Bang, happy days. I'm ready to go on the challenge.
That's right. It's just about creating some consistency now and realizing that it's not going to be a magic thing that starts for you on the day that the challenge starts. These are sort of the clues that we're giving you towards what it's going to be. So really just start putting those things in place and you're already halfway there. You know, I always love to say at the start of every challenge, or for any client that I'm encouraging to do meal prep, grab some new containers. You know, they're a cheap and cheerful way to sort of start a new thing. So just go to the supermarket or Kmart and grab some plastic containers and say, these are mine. And even that is just a fresh start, a way to just think of, you know, maybe three containers, that kind of thing, and just go, okay, I'm going to do this three containers a day, I should say. So maybe because you want to have in advance some meals prepped. And just also, yeah, really just clean those cupboards out, because that's also, it's not just a literal thing, it's symbolic too. It's like, okay, goodbye to that. Here, welcome to the new stuff.
I like it. That's good advice. Well, look, Nick, let's wrap it up there for episode number 30 of the Challenge Weekly Show. If you've enjoyed this episode, let us know. You can leave us a review on iTunes, or maybe you could share this on your Instagram or on your Facebook. We love seeing those who have listened to this one there. And we will catch you next week for episode number 31.
Thank you, everyone. See you.